The scripture today is Matthew 6, 1 through 23. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, so that they may be seen by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. When you are praying, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think that they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Pray then this way: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And do not bring us to the time of trial, but rescue us from the evil one. For if you forgive others their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. And whenever you fast, do not look dismal like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces so as to show others that they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that your fasting may be seen not by others, but by your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of. If your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?
Last week, we allowed Jesus to point us down his path of peace. While looking down that path, we also heard Jesus, the good teacher, anticipate all the corners we might try to cut on that path. Jesus told us, given that the path of peace moves you from legalism to an ethic of love, I'm guessing you think you're getting off easy now. You're looking around the classroom, thinking about all the fun things you can get away with now. But guess what? The path of peace is harder. In the legalistic system, you just couldn't pull Polly's pigtails during my lesson. But on the path of peace, you actually have to help Polly with her homework, even if that means your friends will think that doing so's left you with a chronic case of the cooties. In fact, if you were paying really close attention to Jesus' sermon, you may have also noticed something that I didn't even touch on. Jesus told us to be salt and light, which was to say, I don't force anybody onto this path. So it's your job to be salt and light. It's your job to help to be the example of my path that people can taste and see. In summary, then, so far, we've watched Jesus open his ministry with the Sermon on the Mount. He's told us, stop building your expressway of exceptionalism and start hiking down a path of peace. And he's told us, don't just assume that because you've traded in your hard hat, you're just going to be laying by some stream, sipping organic kombucha all day. Get out there and do the hard work of making peace. And don't forget, by walking the path of peace, you become an example and invitation for others to get onto that path too. So, given everything we learned last Sunday, What did our past week as Jesus' inspired peacemakers look like? Did it look like this? On my drive home, I noticed all those other American exceptionalists driving home from what I suspected were probably their American exceptionalist churches. And although I was tempted to shine a spotlight onto the path of peace for all those sad exceptionalists by abandoning my car in a ditch and walking home, just waiting for them to offer me a ride so I could say, no, no, I'm walking the path of peace, I worried that abandoning my car in the ditch might run the risk of sending the wrong message. So instead, I decided that as soon as I got home, I'd skip my Sunday afternoon nap and instead spend the afternoon salting my Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook accounts with shared articles like 101 Ways Other Christians Lost Jesus, or Want to Really Follow Jesus? Then Actually Love People for Once, and Must Read 12 Ways My Church is Humbler Than Yours. Having really dumped some Jesus salt into the American melting pot that day, I once again pondered a Sunday late afternoon nap, but then decided that my neighbors, the ones who go to the church with the flag at the front of the sanctuary, were probably getting up from their afternoon naps. And if I timed it just right, just as they walked outside to have a Sunday cruise in their SUVs, I could be heading out to volunteer somewhere really impressive, like maybe at that orphanage for the terminally ill, endangered panda bear cubs displaced by global warming. And because I was just so happening to emerge from my home right as they emerged from theirs, I could mention where I was going, thereby blinding them, Paul on the road to Damascus style, with my Jesus light. And then, having done so, I came home, once again flooded my social media accounts with tender selfies I'd taken with terminally ill, endangered, global warming displaced orphan panda bears, and finally went to sleep, knowing that I, at least, know how to walk the path of peace. Okay, so maybe none of that happened. But in my head, some things like that happen far more often than I admit. And to be clear, if it sounds like I'm making light of some very, very important things, things like radical changes to how we treat the environment, generously giving more of our time to others, deep commitments to social justice, do not get me wrong. I'm definitely not trying to make light of that. Doing the hard work of peacemaking is not to be scoffed at. We all truly need to do more of that. But what I am trying to get at is certain kinds of feelings that can creep into that work for me. Feelings that have crept into that work for me to do more again and again and again, feelings that I struggle to keep at bay sometimes. Feelings of constantly worrying that I'm not doing enough. Feelings of wanting to make sure I'm the saltiest salt and the brightest light. Feelings of fixating on making sure that the Christians I suspect aren't on the path of peace will see all the good things I do. Feelings of wanting to make sure that non-Christians see all the good things I do so that they'll know what a real Christian is, and they won't lump me in with those people I secretly suspect are not real Christians. In other words, I know that I can feel simultaneous feelings of worry and self-gratification and self-glorification and self-righteousness. I'm probably not the only Mennonite to be accused of this, of being just a little too proud of being humbler than everyone else. So, if you, like me, walked away from the first half of the Sermon on the Mount, the part we talked about last week, feeling some of those not-so-humble feelings, well then, consider yourself a totally normal human being. Because these are totally normal human feelings for anyone who's not just chosen to walk the path of peace, chosen an easier one to say, but to take its hard work seriously. But fortunately, Jesus the good teacher anticipates that normal human reaction to all this too. And so that's what he turns to address in this next section of his Sermon on the Mount. So let's spend a little time turning to that last section too, expecting that as we do, we will once again hear good news that both releases us from some of our self-imposed pressures and feelings, while also challenging us in ways that all of us humans need to be challenged. Last week, I tried to show why I believe that, after pointing down the path of peace, Jesus anticipated that we, like any students, might hear his lack of legalism and think, oh, the things I can get away with now. And so, anticipating that, Jesus promptly launched into his reminder that that's not so. Don't think you have any easier than the legalists. The way of peace requires more of you. But then, Jesus now anticipates the next thing we'll do. That even after we've agreed to walk on the path of peace, and even after we've embraced all of its hard work, there's another temptation that comes to us very naturally. And this, as I've tried to show in the introduction, is the temptation to fixate on being better than others at doing this hard work of peace. To find our purpose in being the ones who do the most on the path of peace. And then to mitigate all that hard work by finding solace in the fact that we must look really good to others, better than them. And to be clear, being living examples of the path of peace is part of what Jesus calls us to in asking us to be salt and light. But today's passage shows that Jesus also knows how quickly we can distort that for our own purposes. So here's what he says next in Matthew 6. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them. If you do that, you're investing in an earthly reward, the reward of getting praise and adoration. You're not investing in the real essence of the kingdom, which is still true humility. And he says, don't be one of those people who gives money to the poor, blows a trumpet. Again, this is not the essence of this eternal path of peace. And don't, he says, be one of those people who broadcasts prayers or makes sure everyone can see that she's fasting whenever she fasts. In other words, don't be a show-off about your faith. And usually when we interpret this passage, we leave it at that. Don't be a showy Christian. And frankly, we usually picture showy Christians as the ones who would hold some sort of Christian beauty pageant, which, frankly, almost no one accuses the Knights of ever doing. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with our fear of never winning. We assume that just like when Jesus pointed to the path of peace and when Jesus described how much work that path is, we're standing with Jesus, pointing and working hard and waiting for other Christians to come join us on the non-showy side of things. But interestingly, Jesus' statement about not showing off are interwoven with statements about our penchant for judging others. In the midst of this part of the sermon, Jesus teaches the Lord's Prayer, and then Jesus immediately highlights the pertinent part. You'll only be as forgiven as you can forgive others. In other words, you can be as good as you want to be at all of this, but if you do it with judgment for others, you're doing things on an earthly level, not on the kingdom level. You'll be as worthy of judgment as the person you're judging. This emphasis on not judging others is woven into this part of the sermon again. When Jesus says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. And well, what do our eyes do? They look at others. They judge others. Which is to say, they are our potential instruments of judgment. So I think a compelling interpretation of what Jesus is saying here is this. If you want to be my light, if you want to shine as a beacon on the path of peace, don't just think about how they look at you, think about how you look at them. If you look with judgment, you may feel like my light, but you're going to fill up with darkness. In fact, if we'd extended today's scripture reading into chapter 7, we would also see how Jesus gets right to the point. By Matthew 7:1, he comes right out with it. Do not judge so that you may not be judged. In fact, in Matthew 7:21, when Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of the Father in heaven, we usually assume, see, Jesus is talking to all those Christians who say they're Christians, but don't actually help. And sure, that's a very Jesus-y thing for Jesus to say. He says something like that often. But Jesus actually follows that up by listing all the things these people will have done. He says they're the ones who are doing all kinds of deeds. So, what if Jesus was also saying, not everyone who says, look at what a great disciple I am, look at how selfless I was on the path of peace, is automatically on the path of peace for saying that either. To really do my will, to live for others, and to do that in the essence of the path of peace, an essence of true humility, humility that doesn't keep score or focus on trying to differentiate oneself as better, to be working for that peace while crying out, Lord, Lord, look at how much better I am than that person, would be to have looked like we knew Jesus, but to have missed part of the point. So, once again, with this new section of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is a good teacher who anticipates a temptation that befalls all of us who have heretofore followed Jesus' advice. And Jesus once again tries to help us to avoid the next temptation before it starts. And once again, Jesus' teaching is both gentler and more challenging than what we've often assumed he was saying. It's more challenging in that it's really hard to work selflessly for peace and justice. And when you're exhausted from that work, it's terribly tempting to at least enjoy remembering that you're better at that than other people. And yet, Jesus tries to help us to avoid that trap, because it's also a trap. Which brings us to why Jesus' teaching is, again, gentler than our temptations, even as it's challenging. Firstly, it's a gentler way to relate to others. It opens us up to relationships that we might otherwise have missed out on. Having grown up as a Mennonite who found my identity in a theology of peace and social justice, I can remember many times where I have and still do not give the time of day to other Christians whose theologies I find deeply harmful. However, slowly but surely, some of the very Christians that I once saw as beneath me somehow reached out to me and became dear friends. And in fact, some of those Christians told me, Peter, you are called to be a pastor, and you are called to go to Albany, and I am cheering so hard for you in doing this, in ways that, for whatever reason, none of my more like-minded friends ever told me. Jesus' way opens us up to more of those kind of gentle, beautiful, culture war-defying moments. Secondly, Jesus' teaching is also gentler than the way we're tempted to go because it releases us from all that pressure we feel when we believe it's on us to show the world what Jesus was really about. Again, our lives must reflect Jesus. But when we get into that space where we start to compete for Jesus' sake, to try to out-peace or out-humble other people, we start to do Jesus' work for him. We start to act as if God's work in the world relies on us to get it done, rather than on the truth, which is that God is already working in the world. And we simply have the privilege and opportunity to join in on that work. And so, it should come as no surprise that in Matthew 6 and 7, in addition to sayings about not showing off, being woven together with sayings about not judging, there's a third strand woven in. And these are sayings about not worrying, about letting God be the one to do the work. Your kingdom come, your will be done. You feed us, you keep us from evil, the Lord's Prayer says, calling us to use prayer as a moment to remember that we don't have to feel the pressure to do everything. God is the ultimate doer. Do not worry about your life, Jesus says a little later. God takes care of the birds and the lilies and the grass. They don't worry. And later he continues, ask and it will be given to you. Everyone who asks receives. Everyone who searches finds. And for everyone who knocks, the door is opened, which is a beautiful reminder that everyone includes us. So we can trust that we don't have to earn God's love. But it's also a reminder that everyone is also everyone else. So we can open ourselves up to seeing others who might be tempted to see as doing less than us. Not as potential enemies or adversaries, but as fellow searchers and knockers who God is opening God's door for. Even if we sometimes wish God would peep through the peephole and have a second look at it. In short, as we come to the close of the Sermon on the Mount, of Jesus' opening salvo as he begins his ministry, let's continue to grow our commitment to knowing that, one, there's a path of peace, and two, living on the path of peace takes work, and three, the challenge and freedom is that even as we do our hard work on the path of peace, we can release ourselves from the temptation to show off or judge or disconnect or believe that the hardest part of our work is ours, not God's. So, as we go into another week, rather than making sure all our neighbors know that I'm volunteering at that orphanage for terminally ill, endangered, global warming displaced panda bears, let's pause. Let's ask ourselves, where might we be feeling judgment where Christ instead invites us to release it? What might we notice in others, ourselves, and God when we release our need to compete and instead heed Christ's invitation to true humility?